Welcome to Market Insights, a special series of CenterState CEO's podcast Talk CNY, presented by NBT Bank. In this quarterly series, we'll be talking to Ken Entman, Chief Investment Officer and Chief Economist for NBT Bank, about what's happening in the markets and how it impacts you. Today, Ken and I will discuss the fourth quarter of 2023, the volatility of this year, recent economic numbers, and get an early look as to what to expect in 2024. Ken, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us again for another Market Insights.
Great to be here.
Absolutely. So wanted to jump right in. Here we are. We're wrapping up the fourth quarter of 2023, and we've got some new numbers that have come out. We've got some interesting stuff happening with the market. What are we seeing right now?
Well, we're seeing some volatile data. We go back to our last podcast, the data for the third quarter came in incredibly strong. Mm-hmm. GDP up 5.3% in its last revision, which is very strong. And retail sales continue to be really good. And then ever since then, the numbers have been somewhat weak. Mm-hmm. And that has been interpreted as maybe the Fed has done raising interest rates and the stock market has been on a bit of a tear, up almost 10% in the last couple of weeks.
Made up a lot of that ground from the,
up almost 20% year to date. So pretty strong market based on weak data. And then on Friday, we got relatively strong employment data with non-farm payrolls coming in at 199,000 and the unemployment rate ticking down from 3.9 to 3.7. Yeah. So that's given the market a little bit of a pause, mm-hmm. and interest rates have ticked back just a little bit. But quite a volatile last couple of months, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you and I have talked before about kind of what's happening more broadly, right? You've got the numbers around the whether the Feds are going to raise it, you got the unemployment, the what's happening with the GDP in the market. But then we've also seen some really crazy stuff with Treasury this year, haven't we, in terms of the rates?
Yeah, so I think it's something that's bothered me for a long time, but I've been somewhat of the boy who cries wolf. And we're talking about just the general debt level and interest expense for the U.S. government. And that certainly was muddied up by the COVID crisis, because there was just a massive amount of money that was spent by the government to deal with the COVID crisis. But that massive amount of money kind of led to inflation. And what that did was it raised the interest expense for the U.S. government and the Treasury. And it's really starting to be, you know, in the past, I would say it was not a clear and present danger to the economy. But now the level of interest expense is becoming problematic. It's kind of beginning to suck some of the economic oxygen out of the room for the private sector. So if we think about in 2007, prior to the financial crisis, debt was about $9 trillion. Today, it's about $33 trillion. And as I said, the last 10 years, starting with the financial crisis in 08 and then exacerbated by the COVID crisis, we've effectively been in a 0% interest rate environment for the last 10 years. And the onset of inflation has changed that dramatically. Sure. We've talked in previous podcasts that the Fed's raised rates 525 basis points or 5.25% in about 18 months, which is a world record increase in terms of speed. And now that's just beginning to have an impact. But where it really has an impact is on interest expense. Mm-hmm. So this week, the United States Treasury will be auctioning off over $300 billion worth of Treasury bills and notes. And as interest rates go up, it's having a dramatic impact on the budget. So that interest expense last year was estimated to be about 8% of the total budget. This year, it's estimated to be about 14%. Yeah. And it's up almost $700 billion from last year.
Just interest expense,
$700 billion. That's really remarkable. And my concern longer term, even though interest rates, if you use the 10-year note as a proxy, began the year at around 3.28%. They got up to just shy of 5%. And in the last month or so have come back down into the 4.10s. And as of this morning, we're at 4.28. But still, 3.28 to 4.28 is a very big number, especially when you're anticipating issuing over $20 trillion in debt this year. That's a lot of money. If you're paying a full percentage, if not more, in interest rates, that can be problematic.
You're talking about $200 billion plus.
Yep.
That's a lot. You know, I think it's interesting. Sometimes we hear those numbers and it's hard to kind of internalize those, but I think about it from my own personal spending in my own household, right? And so the difference for me would be, okay, if I can if I can, even just the difference between what we were getting in mortgages previously to what we're getting today, right? That spending power is significantly impacted by that percentage point, right? What you can buy for 4% mm-hmm. versus what you can buy for 5%. And the government's experiencing that same thing. Now, not all of us can go out and just issue more money, but that creates a whole lot more problems. But it really is significant when you think about, take that, or even think about putting something on a credit card with those high interest rates sure. versus getting a bank loan with something that's more locked and set in, the impact to your bottom line, to your budget is pretty significant. It gets to a point where you're not making any progress towards that principle. You're right. literally just paying out interest. And that's where you start getting upside down with your spending.
And it seems like
the government might be there.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why I'm so worried about this is the government has taken to issuing a lot of short-term debt, and so it rolls over quite a bit. About 60% of the total debt rolls over every 4 years. So they've effectively been funding the government with effectively a floating rate note. But then when rates go up, it's really painful. So one of the reasons why this concerns me so much is when you look at overall government spending, roughly 60% of it's in entitlements. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of set on autopilot. We don't vote to increase Social Security or Medicare. Though that spending is kind of baked in where they have cost of living adjustments. So really challenging, particularly politically in both sides of the aisle. Donald Trump says he's not touching Social Security. President Biden says he's not touching Social Security. It's a problem. Mm-hmm. And Medicaid and Medicare are even more so because the population's aging so much. But when you have 60% of your budget on autopilot entitlements, another 15% is interest expense, and roughly another 15% is defense. And we're living in a pretty scary world right now. When you add them up, that's close to 80, 85% of the overall budget. It's really hard to see where you're going to cut spending to kind of fix this debt problem.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a long-term concern. And it's a little cavalier to say, well, that's just the government. So, interest expense is going up. But it's going to have an impact on the average consumer. So you mentioned that when you think about buying a home where home prices, we've talked about this really mm-hmm. over all our podcasts, home prices, we were hoping we're going to go down post-COVID, but they just don't have, they aren't because there's a shortage of supply. And we all know mortgage rates are substantially higher than where they were. So for many, home ownership is kind of out of reach right now. Yeah. And even something as buying a car, where those rising rates, and even for just kind of an average startup car, what we are seeing is that the payments are close to $700 a month for a car, where not too long ago, you thought about $400. Yep. So that has a material impact, and that has an impact in the sense that if I was paying $400 and now I'm paying $700 for my car, well, that's $300 less I can spend on fun stuff or mm-hmm. other stuff. And so it's not some esoteric government theory that right. government spending and the debt and the interest expense really filter into the economy. And it's a long-term concern.
And they factor into the Fed's decision-making when it comes to rates and what they're going to do. I mean, certainly the overall economy is much more of a driving factor, but they look at those things and they think about it.
And the scary thing is, I just read an article this week where the spending in the first 2 months, so the government has an October year end, so October and November spending in the new fiscal year was over $200 billion more than budget.
Yeah.
So not only was there a projected deficit, but that deficit is already growing mightily. And I would like to think at some point our politicians will get a little bit serious about this, but I hate to tell you, I'm not terribly confident,
especially going into an election year. But
especially going into
when we think about that, we have an opportunity before us for them to do that, right? Everything's operating on the continuing resolutions right now, and we have until the end of January for new spending bills. Without getting into too much of the politics of it, obviously, but what can people expect when they think about whether those turn into more continuing resolutions? Because certainly, I don't think we're going to see a government shutdown in an election year. But is there a reality, and possibly not even getting to into an actual spending bill or a defense spending bill? Do we end up just kicking the can and saying, okay, all things hold as they are now till we get after the election in 2024? What are you thinking about that? And what are kind of the impacts potentially on the economy for those two paths?
Yeah, I it's going to be challenging. I mean, both the White House and in particular the House are obviously on opposite ends of the political spectrum, and they are both talking very tough. Mm-hmm. We just recently had a continuing resolution, and I think the blame game of shutting down government is something neither party wants. But the likelihood that you go back to normal business where you actually pass a budget like a ordinary business or an ordinary household would do, I'm not overly optimistic.
With cooperation across the aisle.
Yeah. And so, you know, the good news is they always take it to the bitter end. And, you know, there, I find it amusing almost that there's so much hype in the media about, oh my God, the government's going to shut down. And we, you know, it's kind of Lucy pulling the football away from Charlie Brown. Mm-hmm. It happens over and over and over again. And they wind up passing a continuing resolution. So I think the market's kind of caught up with that. Yeah. So you get a lot of heightened rhetoric, but in reality, I don't think it has a dramatic impact. But it we need to get serious about the fiscal psyche of the U.S. government. It's a long-term problem. And the scary thing is we're in the strongest shape of most countries around the world.
Correct.
Correct. So we're the cleanest shirt in a dirty closet, as they say. And that may give somebody some solace, but it's also kind of scary in its own right too.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I think what's interesting is that we've talked a lot about this year. You know, we started the year thinking like, okay, is this going to be a recession? Is it going to be a soft landing? Is it going to be, you know, kind of the other term where, when, you know, basically you just continue with marginal growth? And we've kind of seen a little of it all this year, right? I mean, there's been no point this year where we've said, well, it's clearly this or it's clearly that. Even as recently as, you know, the most recent unemployment numbers, where we had the softening of the market numbers, you know, in terms of the GDP, but then, you know, turn around and the unemployment ticks down 2%, right? So, or 0.2%.
Sure.
So is this, I don't want to say, is this a new normal? I do think that there is still a lot of, we've used the term whiplash. It feels like there's still a lot of whiplash in a post-COVID environment when you have a lot of, you know, geopolitical tensions across the world and across the globe, still kind of loosening up the supply chain. But are we going to see more of this in 24, or where are we headed?
Yeah, I think 24 is going to be a challenging year. You know, it's interesting. I've written a few articles where I talk about returning to normal, and I joke that everybody's got a different definition of normal, but I do think we're grudgingly getting back to normal. And what do I mean by that? I mean that the dramatic emergency spending that, whether it was truly an emergency or not, that came under the guise of COVID relief, it stopped going up. There's still an enormous amount of money sloshing around the economy. So I still think it has a meaningful impact on the economy, but we're beginning to return to normal. Most importantly, what has and continues to surprise economists is that the consumer has remained as resilient as it has. Mm-hmm. And part of that is the employment market continues to be pretty strong. There's no doubt that it's softening a little bit. Sure. But, you know, I have a hard time arguing over whether 3.9 or 3.7 unemployment is a bigger big difference or not. But, you know, I think looking into 24, the thing that I would look to most is consumer spending, because there was an enormous amount of COVID relief support, in particular going to individuals. Yeah. That I think those individuals saved up, and that money is no longer coming through. And there's beginning to be indications that, particularly in the lower income categories, that the excess savings that was built up over COVID is beginning to get exhausted. Mm-hmm. And so when you look into 2024, when you look into the next year, a lot of it is going to depend on the consumer, because that's what's been carrying the day. And if that money, that savings, that COVID support and the savings from that support begins to diminish, does the economy and consumer spending hit a wall? And that's really the concern that the market has. And it really is part of the debate as to whether the Fed's in fact, is it time for them to start cutting rates? And this is a really interesting week because we have CPI, mm-hmm. and we have inflation data. We have a huge, as we mentioned earlier, government auction going on, and we have the Fed meeting Tuesday and Wednesday. So fasten your seatbelts this week. It'll be pretty interesting.
Going to be a bumpy ride into the end of the year. I did want to throw a little curveball at you, if you're willing. So you had talked about the marginal difference between 3.9 and 3.7% unemployment. I know one of the things that happened as a result of COVID and what we are seeing, at least in the labor market here regionally, and we're seeing it elsewhere too, is, you know, kind of the exodus from the labor market in general. So labor force participation rate is a term that we use. Are you tracking anything around that? Is that still kind of, has that recovered at all from kind of that mass exodus from COVID? I mean, we obviously saw it in healthcare and some of the other really stressful work, but, you know, what are we seeing from the labor force participation rate? And is that tracking at all with the changes in the unemployment numbers?
Yeah, so it still ebbs and flows, but generally speaking, it's getting better. It has been growing. I do think there are two primary drivers to that. One is the money that was saved up to the extent that I was receiving government support and saved up a bunch of money that allowed me to stay out of the workforce. We're starting to see lower income people come back into the workforce, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing on a second note, in that the wage increases on the lower tend to be lower. So if you think about, say, the UAW strike and the pretty robust wage increases they got, that generally isn't the case when you're dealing with lower income. So what it's doing is more lower income people coming in, and it's bringing down the overall wage growth, which is an important thing that the Fed watches.
For the inflation piece,
correct. So it is encouraging that particularly entry level and lower income workers are coming back into the workforce. And then something we've talked about in previous podcasts is this retired group, where many people who were eligible for retirement, particularly people, mostly government workers that had full pensions, they took the opportunity to retire. Mm-hmm. And we expected them to kind of come back into the workforce and maybe have a second career. And I joke that retirement must be a pretty good gig, because they haven't done that.
Yeah.
And now we're starting to see some of the retired people coming back into the workforce. So it could be that maybe they have exhausted some of their savings that they had when they were locked down. So there's beginning to be some optimism on both the retirement category and the low income or entry level category, which is a positive, because we definitely still need workers. The JOLTS number, job opening and labor turnover number, is below 9 million. It's like 8.4, something like that, million job openings. So we still have almost twice as many job openings as we do workers, but that's down from 10 million just a few months ago. So we're beginning to see improvement on the labor front. The National Federation of Independent Businesses does a survey every month of small businesses. And in the last month's data, there seemed to be some marked improvement in terms of the ability to find workers. So I do think there's optimism on that front.
Great. Just to make sure our listeners understand, when you see the unemployment number, you're seeing workers that are you're seeing individuals that are actually officially seeking work. They're on unemployment. They're going through that process. So anyone who's not working and is not seeking to find a job, or are on unemployment benefits, they're actually not part of that rate. So you can have, you know, you can have your unemployment number go down and end up also having your number of employed people go down, depending upon what's happening with the labor force participation rate. Right. So that's why I was getting at that. So we talked a little bit before we did the podcast about, due to the volatility this year, you wanted to reinforce a point for the home investor, home thinking about your portfolio, our listeners. You had a piece of advice for them, which I think is very salient as it relates to the craziness that we saw in 23.
Yeah. So 2022, if I can go back to 22, was kind of a historic year. So, you know, investors typically talk about diversified portfolios. And in a very general way, that kind of plays out to be a 60% equity, 40% fixed income balanced portfolio. It varies amongst different people, but that's generally what the market means when they talk about a balanced portfolio. Well, in 2022, the S&P 500 benchmark for equities was down 18%, close to 20%. But importantly, the bond market, as measured by the aggregate index, was down 13%. Think about that rapid raise in interest rates. So it's really rare that so why do we use 60-40? It's because we expect when equity zig, the bond market will zag. But in 2022, they were both double-digit negative. And that led to the conclusion that investors shouldn't diversify portfolios and they should do more market timing, things like that. And we have always at MBT have said, no, you know, stay the course. And I find it frustrating when I watch some of the but particularly some of the television shows, that the time horizon seems to be a nanosecond. Yeah. When it's just not for investors. You're thinking about saving for colleges to buy a home or pay for college educations or save for retirement. And they typically have very long time horizons. So whether the market goes up or down next week is really, truly not relevant to your long-term health. And so that horrible experience in 2022 led many to conclude that diversification didn't work. And this year, what I would point out is that the S&P 500 started the year off almost down 20%, rallied across the summer to being up almost 20%, then lost a whole bunch. You know, in September, October, the markets were quite negative and gave back around 80% of that. So we went from being up 20 to down, up maybe 8. So gave up more than 50%, more than 10%, mm-hmm. which technically is a bear market. And since then, we've rallied and made all of that back up in the last 5 weeks. And we're up, the S&P 500 is up roughly 20% as we speak today. So anybody who thinks they could have timed the market in that whipsaw of a year that we just had, I think is kidding themselves. Sure. And then importantly, the bond market, even despite the rise in interest rates, is up, you know, roughly 3 or 4%. So that horrible balanced portfolio that everybody discarded a year ago is probably going to post a return of close to 10%, mm-hmm. which is a pretty good number historically. Absolutely. And so I don't expect the volatility to diminish much, at least in the first half of next year, or at least until you get a clearer picture of when the Fed is going to and central banks are going to start cutting interest rates. So my message to do-it-yourself home gamers, as they call them, is to, you know, don't give up on a balanced portfolio. Stay diversified and make sure you have the proper time horizon, because the newspapers and the media and the podcasts and the television shows all have to sell advertising today, and their time horizon seems to be a horrible mismatch for the majority of investors' true time horizon.
For sure. You know, I remember coming out of college and thinking about my first 401k portfolio and investments. And thankfully, I had people in my life that gave me that very same advice. And I always like to remember it. Of course, I'm not going to remember the product, but there was a very famous Home Shopping Network television commercial, and it was set it and forget it.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, the mantra for that product. And that's how I've always treated that portfolio for me. You know, it to an extent, obviously.
Yeah, I set it and forget it has garnered a negative connotation for people who want to sell product.
Sure.
But so I don't think it's necessarily set it, forget it, but it's set it to the appropriate time horizon, rebalance or readjust as your needs change. Yeah. So if you're a 20-year-old saving for a home that you plan to buy when you're 30, and you get to 28, the allocation you had when you were 18 or 19 is not the same as you're going to have, because that time horizon's changed.
Yeah.
Or if you're saving, you know, I have a 2-year-old grandson and we contribute to his 529 plan. Well, he's got an 18-year time horizon.
Mm-hmm.
The allocation for that 529 account is very different from somebody who's going to be entering college next year.
Sure.
It's time to spend the money, not invest it and grow it. So it's so critical to get the time horizon right and to rebalance or adjust the risk profile of the account as circumstances change. That's a little different from set it and forget it, right?
Absolutely.
And that's an important caveat.
How I have actually put that into action is not that I haven't looked at my 401k or its distribution since that time. But what I will say is that when I got my quarterly statement on September 30th, I didn't care,
right?
That significant loss that I experienced in those 3 months on my portfolio did not make me go, I have to do something different, because I knew that I had an investment plan that was staying the course.
Yeah, absolutely. And so history tells us that being very, very investing is in the tortoise and hare race.
Yes.
Everybody wants to be the hare and talk about the big hit that they had by buying this tech stock or mm-hmm. this fund. The tortoise wins the race if you do it right. And we're pretty happy being the tortoise.
Absolutely. My recommendation to anybody who needs that as part of their life is do a 50-40, and then you can do something with that 10%.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I think we've covered a lot of ground. I'm curious. We know that there's still going to be a lot of volatility around all the things we've been talking about in 24, but I know we kind of talked about these unemployment numbers, if they were not good and they were soft, then maybe we were heading towards a recession. Now they're a little bit stronger than anticipated. Are we still kind of in a, let's see what the first quarter of 24 looks like, when are, it's subject to when the Fed start cutting rates, if they start cutting rates? What are you thinking about in terms of 24 and where we're headed?
Well, I'm pretty optimistic for 24, but I do think it's going to be a bumpy road in the beginning. And I'll talk about four things, and that's corporate earnings, inflation, the economy, and what does that force the Fed to do? And I think really the Fed is going to be the driver. So first, when we look at the economic growth, 5.3% in the third quarter was pretty robust.
Yeah.
But already the Atlanta Fed GDP now forecast for the fourth quarter is 1%. So we're having a slowdown, which isn't a bad thing. And with slowdown comes lower inflation, hopefully. On the inflation front, clearly the trend is moving in the right direction. So that's very encouraging. And in theory, that should allow the Fed to cut interest rates. But in the meantime, the employment market has been very strong, and so strong that right now the market is what I think is pricing in perfection. Mm. They're pricing in a soft landing, so we're not going to have that recession that we've been calling for two straight years yep. now. We're going to avoid that and have the proverbial soft landing. Inflation's going to continue to trend lower. The consumer's going to slow down, but not slow down enough to force a recession. That's kind of perfect. That's going to allow the Fed to start cutting interest rates. And in the last month, we've pulled the first rate cut, which was pushed out till September. Now we've pulled it forward till March. And the market is forecasting 130 basis points of wow. interest rate cuts in 2024. And that has driven up the stock market to where it's trading at 20 times earnings.
Yeah.
So 20 times earnings with a soft landing that's to achieve, with inflation collapsing to the Fed's target and the Fed cutting interest rates four times. What possibly could go wrong with that scenario? And it's led to a really big rally both in stocks and bonds
yeah.
in the last month. I'm a little skeptical in a world sure. that I don't think inflation's going, I do think it will continue to trend lower, but I think it will remain stickier. I think the optimism that the Fed's going to cut rates as soon as possible or early in March, we'll see what Chairman Powell has to say tomorrow afternoon, but I don't think they're giving up, you know, declaring victory yet. Mm-hmm. So I think that might be optimistic. 20 times earnings for the S&P 500 is on the high side. And so I'm a little concerned, given particularly given the recent rally, both in stocks and bonds in the last month, that we're kind of priced for perfection, and perfection is a pretty rare occurrence.
Sure.
And when you start to think about things like the fiscal deficit on the election year, the military conflicts going around the globe, it's a pretty scary place out there, and pricing and perfection gives me. So I think we are going to have a very rocky road as we kind of work through what is the true economic growth number going to be? Is inflation going to go down to 2% to the Fed's target as rapidly as people want? Is the consumer going to slow down but modestly and not cause it? All those things, we're going to have a lot more evidence in the next couple of months. And therefore, it will really determine whether the Fed is March or is it September.
September, yeah.
And there's a big difference.
That's
a really big sure. difference for the overall markets, because interest rates price really are the underlying input for so much asset pricing around the world. So I'm hopeful that perfect scenario where the economy slows sure. a little bit, inflation drops, interest rates can come down, the consumer still remains healthy. Nothing would please me more to see that happen. I'm a little worried that's a little overly optimistic.
I think that's fair.
What?
Ken, I have appreciated these conversations so much. I am looking forward to continuing them in 2024. And I just am grateful for your wisdom and your information that you're sharing both with me and with our listeners. And I hope you have a wonderful new year.
You do the same. Happy holidays to everybody. It's really fun doing these things. Great back and forth. I appreciate everything you do for us too.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Market Insights, a special series of Talk CNY, is available on clickcny.com and all major podcast platforms. You can join a discussion about this episode on Click, where you can ask questions about this topic and find additional resources. In Click, you can also listen or watch every episode in the Talk CNY series. Click is Center State CEO's interactive digital chamber solution, where our members connect, learn, and receive support from our staff. Go ahead and subscribe right now in your listening app and turn on your notifications. Thank you again to TalkCNY's presenting sponsor, NBT Bank.